Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, 2025 is shaping up to be a year of uncertainty and transformation. I don't need to tell you that. And businesses, policymakers, and individuals are all going to have to adapt very quickly to stay ahead. Now, every year, Flux Trends releases its much-anticipated The State We're In trend briefing, and it offers a summary of where the world is now and, perhaps more importantly, where it's headed in the next 12 months or so. I'm joined now by the founder of Flux Trends, the futurist Dion Chang. So, Dion, this time your theme is stepping into the void. I think it's very apt. It suggests that 2025 is full of uncertainty, but also opportunity for those of us who can navigate this shifting landscape. So maybe the starting point here is the big picture. What's the one thing, the one trend that you think is going to have the most far-reaching impact this year?
Okay. Hi, Jeremy, and thanks for having me again. I think the overarching thing that's been building up for the past 2 years is obviously AI, but I think there's a fundamental shift between 2024 and 2025. We kind of went through sort of generative AI, then it was sort of interactive AI, but the big buzz that all the techies are talking about is agentic AI. So you look at AI as an agent. So it's not a co-pilot to work and to do things, but it's embedded into company systems. And starting to kind of work the ecosystem or the operating system of a company, which is kind of a big one. And then onto that is we were all sort of fed a bit of a complacent lie, and they said no, it's just going to be a work tool that you can use. But we are now starting to see the first signs of AI redundancies. So those are the two big things that sort of go hand in hand together, and specifically for business.
It's so interesting, technology is moving at breakneck speed. There's a lot of business disruption right now. Do you think that companies are up to it? Are they embracing it with the alacrity that perhaps they should, or do you think the fear factor still exists?
I think the fear factor still exists, and I've come across one or two companies that are very, very, they've embraced it a lot, and they're kind of fully exploring where it's going. And even at that stage, I don't think even they quite know how to wield it or how to kind of really, really embed it into a system. So if you sort of out of that quite narrow little spectrum, then it's going to be quite hard to kind of grasp what it can do and where it's going.
And as these companies come to grips with that, obviously you need the right people in the right positions. Do you think there is a paucity of skills in that respect, or are companies starting to recognize the need for massive upskilling and retraining?
I think that the message is there, and I think the problem is that it goes so quickly that that requirement also changes. So, I mean, say 18 months ago, the whole buzzword was, do you have a prompt engineer on your on your payroll to help you kind of deal with AI? And even now, some of the prompt engineer kind of jobs, which is really new, is already being kind of eroded with new functions of what AI can do. So that's quite worrying, that we're not going to keep up with it, and it's going very, very fast.
Let's move from artificial intelligence to something called homeland economics. My understanding is it's more of an inward-looking economic strategy. What is it, and why do we need to be taking notice?
Well, it started rearing its head about a year and a half ago, and this was kind of a fallout of the first Trump administration. Now we've got a second one, and his America First kind of mantra is then going to have obviously repercussions around the world with tariffs, all of these kind of things, and also a very unstable geopolitical situation where there are wars brewing, there's Scandinavian countries preparing for war, there's all types of conscription happening around the world. So I think you're starting to see people really relook their supply chains, sort of re-qualify what globalization is and what does it mean, but specifically logistics, supply chains, and if there are tariffs here, there, and then, everybody looks after themselves, where does that leave sort of the global scenario of the economy and specifically geopolitics? I think going to be very, very tense this year.
And the trouble is, of course, we just don't know the answer to that, but there is risk, there is danger in insular thinking.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's a knock-on effect. It's a knee-jerk reaction, which is understandable. But in the long run, it's going to be detrimental, because if everybody starts sort of clutching, you know, everything to their bosoms, then it's not going to do the world very, very good, because we are already so interconnected. I mean, the other thing that kind of levels the playing fields, sorry for the awful pun, but is climate change and extreme weather. And it really, really is starting to make its presence felt, and it can't be ignored now, although a lot of businesses still do ignore it, and it's kind of being pushed away.
Dion, as we're having this conversation, Eskom is now 300 days without load shedding, all well and good. But just when we thought we could have a smile on our face, Dion Chang says, watch out for water wars.
Yes. Specifically, if you think about it, I mean, it sounds ridiculous because you've had these extreme floods, you know, all over the place, but I've been tracking this for quite a while, and specifically, and I think that's a big flag for us in South Africa, is the impact of water on tourism. Because obviously if it decimates not only the landscape, but it decimates the wildlife with it, then it's problematic. And you know, you already have this concept of climate refugees who are moving. And I think there's a whole lot of new ones from LA that have just said, everything's lost, let's just move somewhere else. But it is starting to do that. And what I also looked at was, they've identified 9 river basins around the world. So some in South America, some in Africa, Middle East, and Southern Asia. And they're all already potential conflict zones, and they are co-joined borders. And there are water, let's say not wars, but water disputes already underway. And if that happens, then they're saying that those conflict zones are just going to kind of exacerbate. And then we're going to start seeing, yeah, things not nice. Mm. It's not just a movie, but the reality of water wars.
And just the final one I want to touch on is something called live stream social selling. You'll tell me that it's booming. So 2 questions. What is it, and how should brands and retailers be rethinking or reimagining their e-commerce strategies?
Well, that's moved rather quickly. So we moved very quickly from just plain e-commerce and online shopping to social media commerce, so it's kind of selling via social media, and now you've got live social media selling. So it's kind of live streaming, depending on your age. I remember those really old telesales in the middle of the night where they were trying to flog you some really bad and cheap jewelry. It's that, but in a social media era. And the reason why there was such a hoo-ha and outcry from the influencers in America about TikTok being potentially banned, we still don't know where that's going to go, is a lot of people make their living out of it. So you've got these large companies and agents that sort of you sell for, they take a commission, you sell live on your platform, and it's hard work, but it is quite lucrative. So it's another form of income. We uncovered last year this weird phenomenon of influencer farms, which are warehouses, mostly in Asia. So whether it's in Indonesia, in Jakarta, or in China, you get these big warehouses with small little cubicles, and each little cubicle has an influencer in it with a ring light and a camera, and they're selling anything from jewelry to bags to PlayStations to what you want there. And it's just kind of this hard sell via social media on steroids.
I thought being an influencer was a glamorous job, Dion. This sounds like a sweatshop.
It is a sweatshop. So that's, you know, when I came across the term influencer farm, it really is that. It is mass produced, like, selling, and it is one big kind of multinational conglomerate that feeds all of the products. They sell for them, and they pay quite a hefty commission, but they still make a decent living. Mm.
I know we'll talk to you again during the course of the year. Dion Chang from Flux Trends, thank you very much.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.